Welcome to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. We are Flipper, the Family Law Practitioners Association of Queensland. Family law is a wonderfully rewarding career, but is not without its challenges. Join us as we explore the issues that impact on the practice and well-being of family law practitioners. We hope our episodes will not only inform and inspire you, but encourage you to reach your potential. Enjoy this episode.
Thank you for joining us on Flipper Talks. My name is Shannon Dakin, and on behalf of Flipper, I have the great honour of introducing our next guest, Deborah Avizio, who is well known in the family law space. Deb is a nationally accredited mediator, arbitrator, family dispute resolution practitioner, and accredited family law specialist. With almost 30 years' experience in family law exclusively, Deb has a wealth of experience and, as a mediator, has conducted hundreds of mediations in family law, as well as in franchising disputes and estate disputes. Deb has had a number of achievements across her career and worn many hats, but one close to all of our hearts is that Deb was president of Flipper for 2 years in 2011 and 2012. Deb, a very warm welcome to the mic. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Shannon. Lovely to be here.
So, Deb, you ran a successful family law firm representing clients in a broad range of family law matters, and you worked as a mediator and a family lawyer for a number of years. In more recent times, you've focused solely on your mediation work and you have a thriving practice. What inspired you to become a mediator?
I love the law in general, and I've always loved litigation, which I think mediators are not supposed to say, but that's the truth for me. But I, again, have been doing this for about 30 years, and I really am looking to do something a little different. And I suppose the court system is not always the best place to get the outcome you need for your clients. So I've always been interested in exploring different avenues. So that's what initially drew me to mediation. And I also think I've got some skills in listening, and I thought that they could come in handy in a mediation practice.
Yes, absolutely. And thinking about the gold star standard of preparing a mediation, how should family lawyers be preparing their client and their case for the mediation? What things should they be turning their minds to and actively be doing to set their client up for success?
Well, I think you have to approach mediation as you would a court event, and you think about the amount of preparation you put into preparing for court. It's not different in mediation. You're actually trying to get the same outcome in that you're trying to get a resolution, but one that your client can have some involvement in. So really, obviously, slightly different preparation if you're doing a parenting matter to a property matter. With parenting, it's more about, I think, arming your client with the information that they need to be in the best position possible to be making some decisions about whether it makes sense to settle their matter. I always think with parenting, you should come prepared with really how you see the arrangements fitting into the best interests of the children, and having a couple of different alternatives so that you can put those ideas out there and see what sort of feedback you're getting from the other party. Mm-hmm. The other issue with parenting is really, with your preparation, look at the practicalities of things for the children's lives. I think it's always helpful if, as a lawyer, you've got an understanding of what the particular children's activities are, what they're doing on particular days. I find as a mediator, when you start to talk to parents, it's not unusual that you get sort of a natural routine that comes into play that you can actually tailor around parenting arrangements. Also, from the parent's perspective, it's a good idea to know what your client's routines are like, what their work's like, their flexibility. Because again, that can naturally lead to a fairly practical solution for what is best for the kids.
And is it with parenting matters, you know, every client is going to have the different issues that are particular to their family that they want to resolve at mediation? In terms of the pre-work before a mediation, do you think it's helpful for people to really get under all those issues with their clients, as opposed to on the day, a constant shifting of the goalposts with different issues cropping up? Do you think it can work better to have people be upfront about the issues and then exploring ways to address them from the start of the mediation?
Yeah, I think it as a mediator, it's always obvious when a lawyer has done that pre-work with their client, and rather than just the seat of their pants dealing with it on the day. Yeah. I'm a realist though. Like I'm certainly aware that there are occasions where you don't have the opportunity to have as much of a conference with your client as you would like in the preparation for mediation. So really as a mediator, I just adapt to where you're at with your client. But gold star, I think you said before, gold star is definitely if you've got the time, do that pre-work first. And I think it puts your client in a much more comfortable position as well. If they're dealing with this concept of mediation, which they're not going to be familiar with, and they're feeling that they're sort of having this discussion for the first time at mediation, it can be a little overwhelming for them. So I think that prep is good for their comfort level.
And in terms of property matters, what are the sorts of issues that you see even before a mediation that start cropping up that you think, oh, okay, this is going to be something that might cause a few roadblocks for these parties?
Yeah, well, there's the standard ones. There's disclosure and there's valuations. And they do tend to cause the bulk of the issues at mediation. And they're things that you can easily prepare for beforehand. I've had a number of mediations where people are contacting me sort of the week before and they're saying, we still don't have disclosure, we're going to have to cancel this mediation. Mm-hmm. My personal view is that you probably don't need to cancel the mediation. It's something that can be dealt with at the mediation. And often when you've got that third party involvement of the mediator, it can make those things happen a lot quickly because you've got a level of accountability to someone other than the other party.
And so with family lawyers that are preparing their clients before they even come, are you of the view that it's a good idea to make sure that clients know their best case, worst case, particularly with, you know, say parenting and property matters as well, the range of outcomes that might apply to this to these facts, and also looking at where that could go wrong for everyone, and so doing some of that pre-work with clients so that, you know, it isn't just left to the day, I guess?
Yeah, I think that is an absolute necessity. It's always obvious when a client at mediation is receiving the advice for the first time. And bear in mind, I do make allowances for the fact that a lot of times lawyers have given the advice and the client hasn't really heard it.
Yes.
And I understand, having been a lawyer and had clients before, how frustrating that is. But I think written advice is the gold star, because really what you're doing in a property mediation is you're really helping your client do a risk assessment as to whether it makes sense to settle on the day of mediation or not. And how do they know if it makes sense to settle if they're not aware of what the likely outcomes might be and the range of outcomes? So if you just think for yourself, like in everyday life, if you turned up to, I don't know, a doctor's appointment or something like that, and you hadn't done any preparation beforehand, you hadn't, you know, even talked about various things, just how overwhelming that would be in dealing with that. So the written advice, again, as from a lawyer's perspective, is a protection for you as well.
Yes.
to show that you have gone through that, I suppose, process with your client. And when they're dealing with the emotions of a mediation and a full day sort of event, it's a very good written record to confirm that you have really had those discussions with them and talked them through those things. So. Yeah.
And making sure, I suppose, from the client's perspective, when mediation can be a, as you said, an emotional day and very draining, so being pre-armed with some advice that they can consider at their own pace, in their own leisure, rather than hearing it on the day with the mediator there and their lawyer, and just making sure everyone's had that time to consider it.
Yeah, definitely. I always, when I speak with parties at the start of a mediation, I do a little bit of digging myself, and just in my introduction with the parties, I talk about, you know, there is no set outcome in relation to this matter. We're talking about a range of outcomes. And really what you're here to do is see if there is a solution possible somewhere in that range of outcomes. So trying to normalise for the clients that it's not an exact science. You know, they're going to have to do some risk analysis for themselves. And I try and simplify it as much as I can because of that emotional factor for them. And just talk to them about you've got this wealth of information available to you on the day of mediation, your legal advisors, the mediator, and you really have to weigh all that information up available to you and come back to the simple question of, does it make sense to settle today? And of course, that's a simple statement. It's obviously more complex when you get down to doing that analysis yourself. But it really comes down to what happens if you don't settle today? What's the alternative? Where to from here? And when you consider that, sometimes the answer is quite clear. Yes, it does make sense to settle today, even if it is something outside the scope of what I was thinking before I came.
Yes. And on the day, so in your work, you work with a number of practitioners of various levels and experience. With the more experienced practitioners that we might put in the excellent family lawyers category, what are those practitioners doing that shows you they're at the top of the game in terms of mediations?
It is obvious when you're dealing with the top practitioners that they have done the preparation. I can tell that they've already had discussions with their client about what the range of outcomes are. They've also had realistic discussions about best case, worst case scenario. And those excellent practitioners, they're not scared to have the hard conversation with their client. We've all had difficult clients who, you know, they don't want to hear what you're telling them. But I think it's important just to remember your obligation as a lawyer is to give advice. It's not your life, your expertise. You're trying to get that across to the client so that they're as well informed and in the best position possible to analyse for themselves whether it makes sense to settle.
And I suppose for some clients, the only experience that they might have from seeing lawyers in action may be in the shows from the US or anything like that. So in terms of the qualities that people bring that you think are necessary and are really desirable for a mediation, because it is switching modes in some respects. And so what do you see the good lawyers in mediation doing and bringing to the table on the day?
So I think you're right. The popular way of representing lawyers through television shows, it's the litigation, because that's the sexy stuff. But I think one of the best qualities that a lawyer can bring to a mediation is the ability to listen and also be respectful to their client. And that's sometimes difficult because you're obviously doing this every day. You've got that professional expertise and you may be dealing with a client who's emotional and not really hearing you and taking on board what you're saying. Sometimes you actually just have to take a step back and let your client process what you're saying and be respectful to them, acknowledge the emotional trauma they may be going through, and just, I suppose, be empathetic. But not to the extent that you take the client's case on as your own, but just be understanding of what they're going through on the day. I think it makes a big difference.
Yeah. And so what are some of the mistakes you see being made during mediations, and how do you see those mistakes working against clients, I guess, in a mediation context?
So a couple of mistakes. One is adopting a rigid approach. I've had mediations where you get the lawyer come in and they're really set on this is the outcome. So they're moving away from how we would normally approach something and look at a range, and they've analysed the case themselves based on the information from their client, and they're very fixed on, no, this is the just and equitable outcome. And sometimes there are cases like that where there is sort of a clear, fairly definitive type of outcome, but that's not life. So I think it's a mistake to remain rigid in a mediation without thinking about what the consequence of maintaining that rigidity is. Yes. it's a dynamic process where there's lots of interlocking factors that have an impact on, you know, the success or otherwise of a mediation. So you've got to use all your people skills continually on the day of mediation and read the room. And rigidity is really difficult to address sometimes, and what it does is it tends to make your opponent adopt a rigid stance as well. And then if that means we've got a Mexican standoff, then what's the benefit to your client of not having it resolved? And even if you know that you're making a compromise that the court may not necessarily impose upon you, still look at the big picture and look at, is that still a worthwhile compromise to make?
Yes.
One of the other mistakes is getting caught up on the figures. You know, I've had lawyers sometimes say, this is, you know, I could not let my client settle under 50% for this matter. Again, you look at that language, I could not let my client, well, it's not up to you to let your client do anything. You're there to give advice to your client and to let them make the decision for themselves. It's just if you get that fixated sort of view of things, it can mean the matter won't resolve, which, again, depending on the offers you're getting from the other side, may be the right result. But just be aware of what the consequence is for your client, how they're going to come up with the money, whether they're going to be better off in the end. Even if they win the principal argument, are they actually going to be in a better economic position afterwards?
Yes. And turning now to the qualities of a mediator. So you yourself, over a number of years as a solicitor, have worked with many mediators. What do you see as the top things that family lawyers should be looking for in their mediators?
I think general respect for people. I think
it's important.
Yeah, it's you're asking someone to be with your client the whole day. So you want your client to feel as comfortable as possible. And that doesn't mean you want the mediator to be telling them what they want to hear. Any good mediator is going to test your client, but they're going to do it in a respectful way. There's also the skill of listening. You know, everybody's different. Every human being has different qualities. But you do have to do a lot of listening as a mediator, and you have to bite your tongue. And some people can do that better than others. But I spend a lot of time biting my tongue and sort of thinking, oh, gosh, I can see the solution. This is so simple. But you actually have to go on that journey first before coming up with that solution. Mm. So listening, empathy, they're really important qualities for a mediator. I think also technical knowledge.
Yes.
A lot of people get comfort from having a mediator do a bit of a talk through their issues, a bit of reality testing, obviously not giving legal advice, but analysing the case with them and with their legal advisor so that they can have some level of reassurance. Okay, these are some issues that I might have to face if this doesn't resolve and I have to go to a court. These are some of the evidentiary issues that I may have a problem with. So that technical know-how comes in really handy as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And so finally, do you have any advice for anyone who's considering taking the plunge and becoming a mediator or a family dispute resolution practitioner?
I think for me, what was a really good starting ground for me is I did a lot of legal aid mediations. So they're very structured. I'm assuming they're the same. I haven't done them for a number of years, but really limited in time. I think it's 4 hours. And legal aid does some training with the mediators as well, and they have a very standardised way of conducting their mediations. And they also do some co-mediations. So I thought that was a really good starting point for me. It's if you are thinking of being a mediator, some of the training is really good just in your everyday practice as well, not just as a mediator. I did the training through QUT, which all mediation training is very hands-on. The other training that I did after being qualified is I went and did some training at Harvard, which is the best continuing legal education I've ever engaged in. So if you did have the opportunity to do that, I highly recommend it. Just, it's similar content that you already will know as a mediator, but it's given in the context of meeting with people from all over the world, getting exposure to people from all different jurisdictions. And that was really one of the most enriching things that I've ever done, that Harvard training with mediation, so much so that I really want to go back and do some more negotiation training and things like that through that institution.
So in terms of the skills of a mediator, it's a continuing process, Deb, just always refining those skills, learning new tricks and being able to assist clients as best you can.
That's so true. Yeah. I mean, the world's an evolving place. Mm. So I have to keep up with pop culture as well and not be shocked by anything that people tell me. So I've still got to read, you know, look at Instagram and make sure I'm up to date with all the lingo and everything
that comes out. Well, that's fantastic. Thanks so much, Deb. There's so many tips for everyone that's listening and we really appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Shannon. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. We hope you enjoyed the podcast today. We confirm that the information we discussed today was just that, information for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not specific advice. If something discussed has you considering whether you should take steps, it is important to make sure you get professional advice about your unique situation before you proceed, whether that be legal, financial, accounting, medical, or other advice. Please reach out to Flipper if there's another topic you'd like explored, and if you know someone who might benefit from the show, remember to tell them about it. Thank you for listening.